105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of BizConnect, the bi-weekly business show with myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-host,
Tracy Westall.
Tracy, lovely to be back in the studio again. I think it's fair to say we're back at work proper now, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Very cold.
Absolutely. We've got a packed show today. We've got a quick review of the autumn statement that we had from the Chancellor last week. I think that's how we're going to kick off the show. And then we've got two brilliant guests. We've got Charlie Graham O'Gillam from Construction Specialists Redkey Concepts. And we've got Alex Baker, who is a partner at accountants Burgess Hodgson.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks so much for joining us today on the BizConnect radio show with Tracy Westall and myself, Martin White. Tracy, I think it's fair to say we've got quite a lot of new ground to cover again today, haven't we?
Oh, we have, yes, especially after last week and Rishi Sunak's in his winter statement what's going on for the next 6 months. Mm. There's a lot of different changes. Obviously, the furlough scheme was going to be finishing at the end of October.
Yeah.
And they now have the new job support scheme.
I'm just thinking, from the Chancellor's point of view, do you remember, we're not actually going to have a budget this year, are we? Because I think the autumn statement has kind of replaced the budget, which we would normally have had in November time, I think, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
But can you imagine, you know, years gone by, you know, Rishi Sunak, bless him, must be thinking, oh, if only I lived, you know, 20 years ago when the budget used to comprise of, you know, fags going up by 5p a packet and 2p on a pint of beer. I bet he kind of longs for that sort of quiet life, don't you think?
I think he does, to be honest.
I mean, that used to be the sort of the sum total, didn't it, of the kind of the budget?
Yeah.
And now he's having to kind of grapple with, you know, this enormous budget deficit, how to keep people in employment and subsidise, you know, viable jobs. I mean, it's just an ongoing nightmare, isn't it? Bless
it him. It is. And the thing is that it doesn't matter what they do, there's always going to be people complaining. There's been some quite big changes. How that pans out for businesses is we've still got to wait and see.
Mm. Well, you started off with the furlough scheme, so you're right, we've got this new job support scheme, so just tell us a little bit about how that's going to work moving forwards.
Well, basically that's for viable jobs.
Viable jobs, that's the key term.
That's
here,
the key
it?
Term that has been used. Mm. So on the 1st of November, this is what replaces the furlough scheme, and the company will actually have to pay up to 55% of the salary. So it's basically asking somebody to work a third of their normal working hours. Mm. And the government will support a portion of that, but realistically there's
incredibly complicated, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I mean, and the way they've worked it all out, I mean, just to sort of try and explain it, so what they're trying to do is now focus on the retention of jobs in businesses that are what they would regard as being viable.
Yeah.
And by that, they mean that if you have staff employed in your business for a minimum of one third of a normal working week, the government will help subsidise the wages of those staff up to an additional third.
Mm.
With the employer contributing not only the original one third that they're already employed for,
mm-hmm.
but then an additional third of their salary as well, by side with the government.
Plus also the employee will lose out because they won't get their full salary.
Yes.
So they actually also have to subsidise as well. Mm.
The employee, realistically, if the employer only puts in one third of the remainder, it will only guarantee, I think, up to sort of 77% of an employee's
I think
full
in total
salary.
Was something like that, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very complicated to work out, and I know that my heart goes out to all the payroll people out there that are going to have to redo this whole schedule to make sure the job support scheme works.
Employers can always you know, make up the salary anyway. I mean, what we're talking about here really is, you know, is people who are employed in businesses part time. That's what we're talking about here. Anybody that's already employed, you know, 100% of the time anyway, you know, will qualify for the, you know, for the government benefit up to a third. And, you know, the employer presumably will continue paying their salary on the basis that they've been paying it anyway.
This is it. But it's very controversial because realistically, a lot of people have been saying, well, if I get rid of two people and keep the third... Mm. I'm going to be better off.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to wait and see how this pans out over the next few months. But, you know, what can you class as a viable job as well?
Yeah.
So it's still early stages. We'll just have to wait and see if anything comes out of that.
But the key thing, going back to it, is this viable jobs thing. So, you know, previously under the furlough scheme, you know, businesses have been able to retain effectively 100% of their workforce with the government picking up the tab. Now, obviously, that's been reduced from September and will be reduced down again from October.
From October, it'll cease. So furlough will cease and
this
new
job... from the end of October.
Yeah, from this job support scheme comes into effect on the 1st of November.
1st of November.
Yeah.
But the point is that, you know, we've been able to stave off huge redundancies in the workforce... through the furlough scheme, enabling employers effectively to retain staff that weren't employed at all necessarily in the business.
Well,
now it's very much crunch time, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and to be quite honest with you, I've spoken to a huge amount of businesses over the last few weeks and few months, and the directors of these companies have not had any assistance whatsoever.
Themselves.
Absolutely nothing for themselves. So you're asking a director of a business to juggle all these different things, the job support scheme, the furlough scheme. Obviously, they're trying to, you know, there's extensions on the CBILS and the bounce back, and you've got the VAT thing and the VAT deferral, self-assessment deferral, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, that's all well and good. But the directors generally have a real minimum wage per month, and the rest of their salaries are derived from the dividends made through the profit of their business. Unfortunately, we're at a stage where a lot of businesses out there are not making any profit. So you're asking these directors to make all these really big decisions, and they're not seeing any personal assistance from the government. And it's causing a lot of distress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress out there for the directors. And it's something that I know is being lobbied with government to try and address this issue. Because although people think that if you run a company, you're a director of a company, you must be loaded. But believe you me, very few directors own a yacht, own an island, and have millions of pounds in the bank. And these people, realistically, especially in the SME market, help actually employ the most people in the UK, and they are actually the stability of our economy. So
we need to see some support for
them
as well.
Most definitely, yes.
But we should, I mean, you mentioned some other kind of news there. I think we should just give a kind of a quick overview. So, so from the 1st of November, we've got the job support scheme.
That's right,
Which is really very much geared towards, as we said, the retention of viable jobs in businesses. And, you know, with the new lockdown that we've seen over the weekend in terms of pubs and restaurants having to close at 10 o'clock at night, you can't help but feel for that sector and you know, what that's going to mean, basically, for jobs there.
Exactly.
We've also got CBILS, you mentioned, and we've got Bounce Back Loan, and they've been extended now till when?
Well, the CBILS and Bounce Back, I believe the CBILS you can actually apply now to the 30th of November.
The big
thing about these loans are that when originally these came out, you had a six-year period to pay this money back with a year's grace. So you didn't have to pay anything for a whole year. It was interest-free for that first year. And then when you started to pay that back, after the year that the money fell into your bank account, you will be paying 2.5% of this loan. Now, what the Chancellor has done is he has now extended that to 10 years, which basically, on a cash flow, you've reduced your monthly payment for your loans by around about half. There's also the ability to take on payment holidays.
Because there's something called payment by growth or something.
Yes, now. That's right, which is
so it's
the
means,
whole
means
thing.
Means tested, effectively. The repayment of these loans will be means tested according to how your business performs in the marketplace.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is this is something that's going to obviously, I think, change as the years go on. You know, this is something where realistically we are going to be paying back for many, many, many years to come, probably decades to come. But obviously the thing is you need to ensure that you know where your business is at that moment in time. You know, there are payment holidays available out there, but I believe there's only one. So use your time wisely. Really have a look at your cash flow forecasting, because don't forget, with all these other changes, if you've got employees, then it is definitely going to have an ability to sort of like rock the boat within your cash flow forecasting.
Well, there is a bit more grace there, though. We've now got businesses have now got till the end of November, because I think it was originally the end of September that they were looking to close out those schemes. So that's positive. They've also, I mean, going back to what we were saying about the hard hit hospitality sector, you know, and obviously jobs there kind of bearing the brunt of a lot of this ongoing kind of lockdown and kind of early closing. They have extended the temporary VAT
rate for
hospitality and tourism as well. Yep. So I think that's being extended till the 31st of March next year now.
That's right, yes.
So that, you know, that will effectively help the margin of those businesses, because I would imagine very few businesses will be passing that saving on to customers. So it will help their margins in the short term. But again, it's a bit of a kind of a sticky plaster over a kind of a huge wound, really, isn't it, for the hospitality sector?
Exactly. And the thing is that, hospitality, restaurants, bars, all of that are really, really being hard hit. But there are many, many businesses out there that supply these businesses. So it is a bit of a domino effect, that realistically, that's been going on. But, you know, obviously we've got the VAT deferrals, the self-assessment now.
Let's finish on VAT deferral before you move on.
Well, the VAT deferral, I'm going to put these two actually in the same bucket, because they are HMRC-led.
Yeah.
Now, the really big thing that people need to realise is it's on a time that, you know, HMRC have a time to pay. You need to discuss your time to pay with the HMRC. That is really, really critical. Please do discuss these elements with your accountant and make sure that you've got everything in line. You can defer your VAT, your self-assessment. You can have another 12 months to pay. You can pay it on instalments, etc. But please, please do remember that you're going to be constantly playing catch-up over the next few years.
Yeah, of course.
So really, you need to make sure that you can at least pay some of this VAT, some of this self-assessment.
Yeah.
Please do not stop paying it. Absolutely.
Well, they're not giving you that option with the VAT.
Not.
They're saying if you've deferred your VAT payment, you'll have the option to make an initial payment and then 11 equal instalments over 2021-22.
Which comes under the time to pay scheme.
It's
which
another payment
you have
plan.
To you have to tell and discuss it with HMRC.
Yeah, you do have to opt into that.
Yes,
it won't automatically happen, but I would imagine through, you know, your accounting software, and certainly obviously discuss it with your accountant. There's probably the facility to do that. And then, sorry, self-assessment taxpayers, you mentioned.
Yes, well, that's also another thing where you can have a time to pay scheme. With HMRC, they're deferring, or they're giving you an extra year to pay your self-assessment to January 2021 for this year, for January next year, sorry. So you need to make sure that whatever you're going to be doing, if you're going to be delaying payments, reducing payments, you must ensure that you have listed it with HMRC on the time to pay scheme. Mm-hmm. Please do not do this without having this discussion with them or with your accountant.
Brilliant. Well, I mean, there's a huge amount of information in there. As always, the devil is in the detail. We couldn't possibly do it justice in 10 minutes on the BizConnect radio show. But what we wanted to do was get that out there in the public domain, as it were, so that businesses are at least aware of the types of things that may be of interest to them and that they can then kind of research further. Mm. What I would say is the FSB have a fabulous COVID-19 dedicated website page. It's fsb.org.uk/campaign/COVID-19. If you just type in FSB COVID-19, there is actually a link to the autumn statement on their website, and you can go through, click on that, and actually look at all of the information that the government has published last week in more detail. Then, you know, discuss it with your accountant, look at your numbers and kind of plan for that moving forwards.
Planning is the thing to do, realistic planning. And, you know, don't sit there and worry about it on your own. Please go and seek professional assistance where needed. And to those directors out there, I feel your pain. I've spoken to so many of you out there. I know that you feel that you've been left out, but I do believe that the directors out there for all these businesses are doing a great job, and please do keep it up. And if you have any problems, please seek help and assistance, because there's loads of people out there that can help.
Brilliant. Well, Tracy, I think we need to leave the autumn statement there. We've got a brilliant guest that we need to get on.
Yes, we do.
She's waiting on the end of the phone.
Let's get her on.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Biz Connect with myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-host,
Tracy Westall.
Tracy, we've got a guest on the line.
Yes, we have. A lovely Charlie.
Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So nice to have you on today. By way of an introduction, please tell us who you are and what your company does, if you can.
Of course, no problem. I'm, as you say, Charlie Grammer-Gillam. I'm co-founder of Red Key Concepts Limited, and we are a privately owned, family-run main contracting and development company.
So we're talking about the construction sector here?
Yes, yeah, main contracting within the construction sector. We're based in Kent, and we cover the whole of the southeastern London. And bring together 15 years of specialising within the construction industry. So what we do is we oversee the planning, design and construction of any build project from the early sort of idea stage down to the final end result. So we work within the residential, commercial, hospitality, education and healthcare sectors. It's a nice broad range of clients and a broad range of experience that we bring. We follow up with a lot of works within sort of colleges, etc., etc., and have a nice dynamic to the business that we run here.
And I mean, I think it's fair to say that the limit of my construction experience is Grand Designs, which I love as a program.
One of the
things that sort of private development projects sort of tend to really kind of get into hot water with, I think it's fair to say, is the kind of the main contractor kind of relationship, and you know, the owner of the project all of a sudden deciding that they want to go it alone and they're going to project manage it, and you know, they're going to sort everything out. But presumably that's normally where you would fit in on a project like that. Is that fair to say? You would
absolutely
cost it, tender for it, and then actually make the thing happen and build it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a two-prong pronged sort of approach to what we do. A lot of our business and a lot of our clients are recommendation or word of mouth or referral, or repeat clients. We sometimes have clients that have their own land and they're self funded, mm-hmm. and they would like to invest in that land and develop themselves,
mm-hmm.
and at which case we would be involved from that very early stage. We would instruct relevant architects,
mm-hmm.
planners. We've got our own house QS, quantity surveyor here, but we would sometimes look outside depending on workload so that we would be able to get the project fully costed. And really, you know, it is the client's funds at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
They really do need to be involved in the project as much as they want to be. So we have to be very open and like to work in a more of a collaborative sort of nature rather than taking full control.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our clients are well aware of and very experienced and successful developers in their own right. And they just really would prefer to take a step away from the mundane and rather tiresome at times day-to-day problems and project management of any construction build.
Because yeah. There's an awful lot involved, isn't there, in sort of, you know, from buying a piece of land to then erecting, you know, potentially multiple properties on it and kind of selling them and making money from them. So, you know, the logistics of any kind of build project, I would imagine, are quite kind of extensive and detailed.
Especially when the land doesn't have planning on it.
Right.
So clients could come and they with land that they've inherited from family members, old farmland, etc. And right from that very early stage, we would like to get involved, and we do get involved with getting the right people on board for that right particular project.
Mm.
In Kent, we have to be incredibly sympathetic with the surrounding areas as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some fantastic architecture practices out there that we are lucky to work with,
mm-hmm.
who really embellish that and actually really sort of understand the nature of certain little tiny pockets of Kent.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky, and what we do is we sort of sit in the middle, Martin,
uh-huh.
and we will put together that team, and we will very much manage that team with our own site staff and our own head office staff as well. We will procure the packages, we will procure the material.
Uh-huh.
And as I say, from conception to delivery, it's the entire process.
So, I mean, it all sounds like this sort of wonderful utopia, Charlie.
Like a one-stop shop.
You know, and it's like, oh, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go and buy a field and I'll just get Charlie to sort it all out for me. But as we know from Grand Designs, it doesn't quite work out like that, does it? So where does it all kind of start to go wrong and unravel? And the thing that kind of jumps out at me is there seems to be a sort of a budget expectation on the part of the developer, you know, the private client that you're working with, and then there's the kind of the harsh reality of how much it's going to cost to get it done. So where in your experience, what are the kind of the major kind of potential pitfalls?
I think for the more novice developer, i.e. one that is just starting out and they need us to fully manage, a lot of the funds and a lot of the funding and the costs are where you won't be able to see them.
Right.
For instance, the drainage, the foundations, etc.
Mm.
The Grand Designs section of it is a very small part, unfortunately, because that's the end of the budget.
Yeah.
When everything looks pretty and tidy and neat, that's generally where the budget is at the tightest,
uh-huh.
is at the finishing product.
Right.
So for us, it's very much managing the client's expectations from day one.
Mm.
They may want something that it looks like a £30,000 kitchen, but unfortunately, in reality, that's not going to be the case for some budget.
Mm.
And it's going through a very in-depth and intricate cost plan from day one, so there aren't any anomalies.
Yeah.
We try and do our best to de-risk absolutely everything by getting the relevant topo surveys,
right,
etc., done right from the very start.
Because I was going to say, until you actually sort of sink a digger into the ground, you don't really know what you're digging up anyway, do you, I guess?
No, ultimately. And I think going back to your original question, where can things go wrong? Well, if you start a project without full working plan drawings, when you just go ahead and commence, and hope that it works. I mean, it's incredibly risky. We're totally the opposite end, unfortunately. Being a privately run business, we really do have to de-risk everything that we do. And if that means that there is a slight delay to the start of that project, then if our clients' expectations are managed and they know the full reasons for why, then you know, we're trying to eliminate such risks and where things could go potentially wrong. Touch wood, we're yet to experience something that has come out of the woodwork because of that practice.
You raised a really interesting point there, because am I right in thinking that a lot of the tendering you do is done on a kind of fixed price basis?
Very much so.
Right.
A lot of our, I would say a majority of our projects are now on the traditional main contracting route.
Yeah.
So we therefore do have to factor everything in. And in order to do that, we need to have the correct information to price again.
Yeah, because you're safeguarding yourself as well as the client's budget, obviously.
Absolutely. The last thing we want, Martin, is to be in a position whereby we have to say to the client, it's going to cost X amount. That's not where we are going to get any more repeat business, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And generally, if everything is factored, we have a fantastic team here, and we do generally factor absolutely everything we possibly can, and do our very best to facilitate that for the client. Yeah.
Fantastic, brilliant, Charlie. What I'd like to do now, I think we're going to play a little bit of music. And then I'd like to come back and I'd like to talk about your business in the context of everything that's going on in the kind of the wider business landscape at the moment, and how you've been affected and where you see the kind of the big challenges for the construction industry moving forwards in Kent. So we'll play a little bit of music and then we'll be straight back after this.
Thank you.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got the absolutely fabulous Charlie Grimmo-Gillam on the line today from Red Key Concepts. Charlie, lovely to have you with us.
Thank you. What a lovely welcome back that was.
Oh, fantastic. Charlie, we were talking off air about obviously the kind of the current business environment and the impact that's had on your business. Can you just kind of take us back to the beginning of lockdown and what that meant for you as a business, and how you've kind of had to change perhaps your business model moving forwards post-lockdown and where you see the challenges in your business going forward? Just take us back to the sort of beginning of lockdown, if you can.
Yeah, I think, I mean, firstly, to get everything into perspective, I think the overall drop in construction productivity throughout the UK was about 35%. And I think this really has highlighted how us builders especially need to follow updated guidelines to get back on track. Where we had various challenges as various sectors do change. We had almost a two-prong challenge. We had on-site procedures with all of our sites, and then obviously we had our head office procedures. But throughout both of those prongs, the four major, I think, universal challenges that we have to date suffered since lockdown. It concerns really, the first is the delay in the project completion. Our projects are on a contractual nature, and unfortunately the unprecedented speed at which COVID or coronavirus and the pandemic has spread across the UK especially highlighted how significantly it had impacted on the construction and engineering industries as a whole, and it's forced us to slow down our production.
Right.
The obvious delay in which materials were sought and delivered on site due to a shortage have caused a huge impact. So where we've wanted to continue working, we really haven't been able to. And I think it's important as well that we had to ensure, and we still do, that all of our staff and our site staff are in a position to work safely and to police staff on site safely.
And presumably, you know, the old adage, you know, time equals money. That's had a knock-on effect in terms of you being able to deliver projects against the original specification and price, ultimately.
Absolutely, and it's something we've had to speak to our clients about in great detail and the various contract administrators. As far as I'm aware, and I could be wrong, there is no force majeure that has been implemented with regards to construction contracts being delivered. But there has to be some kind of empathy here. Any client, if we were to go to an adjudication, which is ultimately how it would end, unfortunately, would find it quite hard, I think, to not grant an extension of time, showing that we have done everything in our power to ensure that the builds have continued safely and as correctly as they should have done.
So the key thing there, I guess, is having that ongoing open dialogue with clients so that they understand everything that's going on and the knock-on impact that's going to have on the project.
Absolutely. And and you know what? They do understand. They've seen that we've done our best to get back onto site as quickly as we possibly can. They are fully aware of items that can and can't be delivered. I think there was something that hit the local news about plaster, etc., becoming more expensive than gold dust or whatever. But
a bit like toilet rolls. Yeah, exactly. You can't buy it at the supermarket, but it's the same thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. yes, it's sort of nationwide, unfortunately. I think another challenge that we've had is an unreliable supply chain.
Yes.
And it just sort of highlights to us the economic shockwaves that COVID-19 has exposed insofar as vulnerability of our supply chain. Now, as a local business and as a family-run business, our aim and one of our USPs is that we do try to, where we possibly can, engage on a local supply chain within the Kent sector. It's giving something back. We were able to build up good relationships with the supply chain and the consultancies, and they understand how we work. We're not just a number in their system. For us, it's paramount to secure and communicate and build on the relationships with the supply chains, and doing so for us. A lot of our material suppliers have been very favourable with regards to the limited delivery slots that they've had, and also extending our payment terms as well, knowing that they get paid on time. And we mentioned off air that, you know, we don't have to, we don't rely on many overseas supply chains because of that. And we try and resource locally, and I think that's something that we are able to offer as a company.
So has that been a benefit, or has that been a hindrance in this particular instance under lockdown?
I don't think it's been a hindrance by any forms or means. I just feel that for us as a business, we've had to change our approach slightly different, and as I keep saying, managing our expectations, managing the client's expectations more than anything else. With regards to maybe focusing on other areas of the build where the materials are available, bulk buying, et cetera, et cetera. And just to accommodate, it's just sort of, without sounding incredibly cliche, just thinking sort of a bit more proactively and outside of the box.
Having more conversations with those businesses and being really open, that is the one big thing that we've found, is to actually have your conversations with your supply chain, because your supply chain is so crucial.
It's absolutely monumental, Tracy. Absolutely.
And presumably, you know, if it sounds to me like you've been in a position, you know, to understand their pain as well in terms of, you know, payment of invoices and things like that. And you've been able to be, wherever possible, sympathetic to that and perhaps, you know, pay suppliers more readily than you might otherwise have done.
Absolutely, and and just keep that communication sort of channel well and truly open. And, you know, if you're going to pay on that Friday, you pay on that Friday. Yes. And for whatever reason, if you can't, you accommodate.
Yeah.
And I think it works both ways, to be quite honest. And it's managing the situation, which, to be fair, a year ago, none of us really knew about. There are always challenges facing the construction sector, unfortunately, and it's just how we adapt and how quickly we adapt to those changes. One of our other problems and challenges that we faced as a local business is with our workforce. So managing our, and they have been and they are more than capable and more than committed workforce.
Yeah.
It has set its own challenges. The schools being shut, childcare, both partners working, both trying to juggle work from home. It's trying to give our all of our staff the safety that they need. And also the conversation and the engagement of what we were going to do as a business and how we were going to manage it.
Yeah. So and being flexible with staff, I guess, and trying to accommodate, you know, their needs wherever possible as well.
And enabling all the staff to work remotely safely and not feeling bad about it, to be honest.
Yes.
Things like MS Team and Zoom have been invaluable to us all. And just keeping the volume of work up for the team and ensuring that they are still very much part of a working business. Where we've tried to keep things going as much as possible.
Yeah.
It's, again, managing their expectations and giving them all the tools they need and support. And that's safeguarding them, that's keeping their mental health a good check on that. There's been some fantastic webinars that I've personally sent out to all of our staff that should they wish to participate in, they are more than welcome, and to try and encourage them to do so. It's been such an such a stressful and uncertain time for everybody, I think. So,
but what a contrast with a lot of employers we've been hearing about who, you know, have furloughed staff, for example, and then not spoken to them for months, you know, and staff not knowing, you know, whether ultimately they're going to have a job to come back to or not, and they've had very little dialogue. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The more proactive you can be ultimately, you know, the better the business is going to be when we come out of this. Is it fair to say, is on a kind of construction level, Charlie, is everything back up 100% now, or is it still you know, operating at a level kind of below its peak pre-COVID?
Well, I think I was reading something in RICS, RICS. I mean, I think only 20% of projects on hold are expected to restart, sort of imminently. And on average, they are expected to be on hold for another sort of 130 odd days.
Right.
So I think there's this kind of want to push us on, and there's a very much an emphasis on accelerating and delivering the shovel-ready projects that are ready to go. But sensibly, when you're doing your work of programme or your programme of works for the client, it's not necessarily beneficial to just get the shovel ready, get out there and crack on when you know you might encounter other issues 6 months down the line because you haven't been properly ready, and you haven't taken the risks and done your research and factored in what could happen potentially in another 6 months. So I think we're all being very, very cautious.
Right.
And Boris has been very upfront and honest and encouraged our industry to get back to full speed, which we've all tried to do. And I know a lot of the tier ones have done that, and they've been working throughout. For us, being a lot smaller and a lot more local, we've not had that luxury, unfortunately. And we've wanted to take a more ethical approach in this and ensure that what we do and what we've done over the last 6 months has no lasting damage to our business. And I think that's really important. And, you know, it's one of those, I think with any business and any local business, we're all facing the same challenges. I think ultimately it's going to take time and money to continue the construction business. But I think if we all think about the all risk mitigation and involving all of our employees and getting them very much hands on, it's going to help an awful lot. Mm-hmm. With us, we were lucky that we introduced a staggered start back into the office. So we're an open plan office here, and we had the various independent risk assessments carried out to ensure that we were a COVID secure office, yeah. So that our staff felt safe. They've been issued with all the relevant PPE, and I've made it very clear that if they feel unsafe for whatever reason, to let us know.
Yeah.
And all we can do is just follow the government guidelines,
yeah.
Ensure that everything on site is as it should be. There's lots of toolbox talks, which I'm sure will interest you, Martin, on site. They're basically induction talks. They now include the COVID-19, manual handling of tools, ensuring that there's safe working practices. We ensure that all paperwork is logged, temperatures are taken and logged. Nobody comes on to site until their temperature has been taken and logged. And we've got the relevant signage now, which we had right from the very beginning, to be honest. But now we've introduced a maximum of 6 people to one area.
So the message here, I guess, is that, you know, you want to be back in business. You are out there, you know, continuing to operate as a business, but in very much a safe context, and also a slightly risk-averse context as well when it comes to taking on, you know, new projects, for example, where perhaps, you know, the shovel hasn't gone into the ground. You need to kind of look at those on a case-by-case basis and say, actually, you know, this isn't the right time to start that particular project, or it is, and kind of continually evaluate your business on a day-to-day level in that way, I guess.
Absolutely, and don't get me wrong, we have identified some great positives from working remotely, and just reevaluating our business as a whole. We've identified how well all the teams do work remotely, to be honest, much to my annoyance, because I like to chat to everybody all the time, but they work incredibly efficiently remotely. We were really lucky to be awarded 2 new really exciting projects whilst in lockdown, because we spent a lot of time with our clients, and they were able to have the time to reevaluate their portfolios and what they wanted to do. So we could focus on sort of tender returns, various costings, and continue marketing the company as we do. And as such, we ended up taking on a very experienced quantity surveyor. We've taken on another member of staff at director level.
That's another really good point, because a lot of businesses have buried their heads in the sand, and you know, you mentioned the word marketing. You've continued to market your business, and you've reaped the benefits in terms of, you know, you've had a couple of tender invitations, and you've been successful. And unfortunately, a lot of businesses haven't done that. You know, they've gone into that kind of
hibernation,
not spend any money, don't do any marketing, and of course, as soon as you stop doing that,
you get forgotten.
Yeah, people forget you, and you don't get invited to tender because you're just not in front of people. So that's a really good learning as well, I think, isn't it, for businesses at the moment?
Yeah, and I think we also had the time as well to secure the better relationships with our local supply chain. And at the same time, we met remotely and discussed preferential payment terms and increased credit limits. They could see us for what we were doing, how we were paying on time, what our turnover was increasing to. So I think everybody and every business owner will always say they never have the time to focus on their business and review. For us, we did. And we've had to understand the change and the trend in the market and act accordingly. And being the size that we are, and being a family-run business, we've been able to do that. And for us, it's been of a benefit.
It's brilliant, the fact that you've taken the time to look at your business process and understand it, and look at it at that much detail, I think is superb. So, Charlie, we've run out of time, unfortunately. But what I would like to do is let people know how they can get in touch with you. Say they have a, you know, somebody wants to self-build a home, or, you know, a small developer out there wants to get in touch because they'd like you to tender for their latest development, or, you know, it might be an academy or a school or a college that's got some works coming up that they'd like you to get involved with. How can they get in touch with you? What's the best way to do that, Charlie?
The best way of getting in touch is via the website, www.redkeyconcepts.com. You can also find myself on LinkedIn. It's Charlie Graham O'Gillam.
Yep.
We've got an Instagram account, a Facebook account, and a Twitter account.
Right.
And they will show the various different projects that we currently work in and the progress that we make within the educational, commercial, residential, hospitality and healthcare sectors.
Brilliant.
The general builds that we will start at are around about sort of 500,000, and then we go all the way up to sort of £10 million builds. But we are always, always happy to look at and discuss any future build requirements that anybody out there has, or help in any way that we can to guide and assist with system in the future.
Brilliant. And I hope to see you on Grand Designs at some point on a project in Kent.
Oh, I wish I could be, Martin. My life is really not as glamorous as that. There's always ambition there. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, Charlie, for now, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you
so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was absolutely brilliant. And we'll catch up with you again at some point in the near future, I hope.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Biz Connect. I'm delighted to say that we've now got our second guest with us on the line, and that is Alex Baker, who is a partner at accountants Burgess Hodgson.
Good Alex, afternoon, Martin.
Great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
I can imagine that together with HR professionals, accountants are probably some of the busiest firms in Kent at the moment. Am I right in thinking that?
You're right. It has been a very, very busy time for us. We first noticed a few changes coming in the questions people were asking back in January and February, and some uncertainty there. So ever since then, really, it's been full throttle.
Well, I think what we'll do is we'll do the interview, if we can, in two parts today, and we'll talk about some of the new initiatives that came out of the autumn statement last week as part of the winter economy plan. But by way of an introduction, just tell us a little bit, if you can, in your own words, about Burgess Hodgson, who you are, and what you do, and where you fit into the organisation as one of the partners, if you can, Alex.
Yeah, sure. So we're a large firm based in Kent, and we've got 20 partners, over 150 staff. And we also have a team of qualified tax advisors as well. So we're fairly well-rounded, and we cover all areas of accountancy and taxation, really. So whether that's, you know, larger businesses looking for audit and assurance services, right the way through to businesses that are just starting out. So it goes right the way through from accounting and audit, tax planning, bookkeeping, company secretarial. And also we do some payroll, and also assist with corporate finance aspects from time to time as well. So some mergers and acquisitions, which can be quite exciting.
Wow. So, and your main office, am I right in thinking you're based in Canterbury?
We are based in Canterbury. Mm-hmm. We've been here for over 40 years. We were originally based in London, but now we made the move sort of to become back down here.
Mm-hmm.
And we really are keen on our corporate social responsibilities and supporting local, and we've got an extensive network, and we try and bring those clients, friends and fellow professionals together as often as we can. It's not being easy at the moment. So we're thinking of new ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's obviously been virtual, but we're trying to keep that network going, keep everybody talking and supporting one another.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And that's one of the big things, Tracy. We heard Charlie talking about just communication.
Oh, it's key.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's amazing, though, how many businesses just you know, simply haven't been doing that either with their, you know, with their clients, with their customers, or more importantly, you know, with their staff. So, you know, presumably, you guys, are you now back in the office, or are you working remotely, or?
So we switched to everybody working from home, and just before the original lockdown, if we can call it that, at the end of March, and it stayed that way for quite a while. We just then began to look at a phased return, and having teams back and collaborating two days a week if we can, and now we're just reviewing that based on the latest guidance, and it, you know, it's a movable feast really, but everybody's been working really well, and we've had to find new ways of communicating with our clients, using all the different virtual call platforms really, and it's meant that we can touch base a lot more regularly than your annual meeting that we used to have with some clients. Interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, from your own business point of view though, you know, how frustrating is it for a firm like yours to be told, you know, you can't come into work because we're under lockdown, and then we'd like you to get back to work because, you know, we're seeing businesses in the local kind of support economy suffering, to then be told, if you can work from home, we'd like you to work from home again. How difficult in practice is that to kind of manage inside a business?
That's really difficult. We've experienced that ourselves, and I can only imagine for other businesses, as we've seen with the general public being confused, that the message changes so often. But also appreciate that, you know, the government are doing what they can to keep the message as clear as possible. But yeah, it's not at all easy, you know, to adjust.
No.
It takes a lot of responsibility for business owners really to have to trawl through the guidance themselves. Try and work out what is changing and what's coming in, and plan as best they can from that point. I don't think anybody can be criticised for being proactive and getting stuck into the guidance, really.
Yeah. And I guess for firms like yours, you know, where remote working is possible and ultimately may well, you know, be preferable on some level. You've seen some kind of direct business benefits, I think, haven't you, in terms of business productivity, for example, because, you know, people simply haven't got to commute, and we all know what the traffic in Canterbury can be like at rush hour morning and evening. Yeah. So I guess, you know, in some ways, there are some benefits there.
There are some benefits, and I think staff would feel that they do, that they are more comfortable without having to commute and possibly losing half an hour or an hour of their day either side of the working day normally, and hopefully that makes them feel more productive when they are, you know, then tuning in, whether it's on their laptops or iPads, and certainly, you know, for them that cuts down on their own expenditure on travel costs. Much the same as it would for businesses that would normally go out and see their clients as well. They'll be seeing reductions in travel costs and some time savings there. And as I said before, we've used that to try and contact clients more often and make sure they're getting the support they need at the moment.
I guess the challenge comes in, you know, training new staff, though, perhaps, and I know you have a very sort of proactive graduate kind of recruitment intake as well into the business. So that's the challenge, though, isn't it? When you're bringing new people and inducting new people into a business, and you can't do that remotely. I mean, that's the reality of that.
Exactly right. I'd agree wholeheartedly with that. It's you hear the phrase "learning through osmosis," and in practice for us, that's exactly how we like people to pick up new skills. You'll be aware that we've got a whole training program underneath it all that makes sure that people are fulfilling the qualification, but actually on the job training is incredibly important to make sure that our ladies and gentlemen are then as well rounded and are supporting all of our clients, and have the background knowledge on all clients.
Yeah.
You can only really pick that up from being involved in the same meetings or telephone conversations, really.
Mm. So pros and cons there, I guess. But tell us a little bit more about your role, Alex, because I know you're a partner at Burgess Hodgson. So what does that actually mean in layman's terms for, you know, for people on the outside? What does a partner of the business actually mean?
So we're at the forefront. That's both for our clients and our staff. And making sure that we're supporting on both fronts there. I joined the firm in 2011, qualified as chartered accountant in 2014, and then was made a partner in 2018. So that's really where my client-facing journey really picked up, to be honest with you, and trying to get out there and find businesses that need support that maybe haven't had it before. And build a portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
That means that no 2 days are the same, and I find that part incredibly exciting about the job.
So when it comes to a portfolio of clients and the management of that portfolio, the buck stops with you, I guess. Ultimately, you are the guy at the top, and if a client has a grievance or a concern, then you know ultimately you are the person at the top that needs to deal with it if you need to get involved on that level, I guess.
Exactly right, and all of the partners here have got incredibly supportive teams, which makes that job a lot easier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Brilliant. Alex, I think what we'd like to do now is we're going to play a little bit of music, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about some of the specific initiatives that came out of last week's statement from the Chancellor. And if possible, I'd like you to kind of offer some practical and kind of pragmatic advice for business owners in terms of how they can act on those individual initiatives and the types of questions that they need to be asking their financial advisors, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back again, everybody. For the final part of the show today, we are talking to Alex Baker, who is a partner at Accountants Burgess Hodgson in Canterbury. Alex, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Martin.
Thanks for joining us today. I think what we'd like to do in the next sort of 10-15 minutes, if we can, just to kind of close the show out, is talk about some practical advice that you can offer businesses in the context of the autumn statement last week and the winter economy plan that the Chancellor announced. So there's one thing in particular, I think, that kind of stands out for us, and that is the job support scheme and how businesses should realistically go about planning their human resource requirements within their business in the context of, you know, suppressed business demand, for example, government support schemes that are out there. How do I, as a business owner, plan, and future size my business in human resource terms, Alex?
Yeah, so you've mentioned the job support scheme already, and that's an incredibly important part of this next phase of really tackling the issues that the economy is facing with coronavirus.
The Chancellor talked about viable jobs and the need to support employers that have got viable jobs in their business. But what on earth does that mean, Alex? What is a viable job?
So each business is going to have to look at, in turn, look at their revenue streams and how demand is going to be affected. They're also going to have to look at any fixed costs and variable costs that they have. And I would suggest that most businesses have a look at producing a forecast, if they haven't already, with the issues they've faced since March, and look at just what resources they are going to need. Mm. All of these schemes that are announced in the winter economy plan revolve around dates around November, so the beginning of November, as the job retention scheme is winding down at the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we could be in a position where certain areas of the country are in local lockdown, some already are, and they seem to be 2 weeks where that area is then placed in lockdown. So we can see different businesses being affected at different times,
mm-hmm.
and the position seems to be reviewed fortnightly from then onwards, with certain changes being made to those restrictions on a case-by-case basis. So, Martin, it's incredibly difficult, but I would urge every business to sit down with their with their, either their management team or their team of advisors, and look at putting together a forecast. It doesn't necessarily have to be detailed, but certainly having a look at cash flow as one area of that forecast is going to be the most important area. Tracy, I think you'd agree.
Yeah, most definitely. And I've been telling people to do more than one cash flow forecast, to be honest with you, because, you know, especially when things don't necessarily seem to be very clear cut at the moment, but to have a really good idea about roughly where they're going to be sitting, I think is really, really key, and you're right.
Exactly. And it could be that businesses have different, you know, there's a different effect on each revenue stream. Hospitality, for example, they may be facing a full closure in a local lockdown situation. For other businesses, they may be forced to close their business premises, but may have other avenues, to, such as online, an online market that, that could still generate some income. They do have to have a look at different scenarios, really, and from there trying to calculate what resources they do need, and if support can come through the JSS, then they'll have to work their way through the calculations, which we've seen under the job retention scheme isn't easy, with changes to the definition of how usual hours is calculated. There's another promise from the Chancellor that will be made clearer once again. So we'll see once the JSS guidance has been released whether that's the case or not.
Yeah, I know that the zero contract hours has been a bit of a problem with this JSS scheme.
Yeah, and there are still the individuals and businesses that have fallen through gaps elsewhere as well that are still around from March. Anybody that was self-employed and had just started out, they won't qualify for the self-employed income support scheme. And we've still got businesses that employed people just after sort of the 19th of March. And then before the lockdown, where those employees don't qualify for the job retention scheme. Now, a good point to come out of the job support scheme is that an employer or employee doesn't have to have been enrolled in the previous scheme. They just have to have been on the payroll as at the 23rd of September, last week. So that is one positive, but there still are some gaps there that have been around for a while now.
There's been some few, isn't there?
So, I mean, going back to, one incredibly practical tool that we've just been talking about, the cash flow forecast, obviously the top line is your income, it's your revenue, and then everything gets deducted from that effectively. What you're saying, Alex, is that, we could well be in a kind of an ongoing on-off kind of two-week lockdown kind of scenario. Is it really practical to expect businesses to create any kind of financial forecast building in a kind of a rolling two-week lockdown over the next 6 months? Is that really practical? How many businesses could actually survive a rolling lockdown on that basis, in terms of the revenue that they wouldn't be generating? Is that practical?
It may not seem practical, but you have to produce that forecast based on the areas of certainty that you do have at the moment. So on the known facts that are around, and you have to produce it on that best, the best available information that's there. I'd appreciate that some businesses may feel they wouldn't survive another lockdown if it was 2 weeks or more, but unless they sit down and get their team around the table and start plugging those numbers in, they're not necessarily going to know.
And the reality is, that a lot of businesses are already facing that. I mean, in the southeast, we're not necessarily, we're certainly not in Kent and London, but in Wales, in parts of the north of England, they're already kind of going through that. I guess that already is a reality for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And in hospitality already, with the restrictions coming in last week to close at 10 p.m., businesses that I'm aware of and assist with have already been looking at what those reduced opening hours mean for them. And we heard a lot about businesses pivoting in the last lockdown and finding ways. And I know that certainly in hospitality, they're looking at that again now, and how can they make you know, how can they maximise revenues and make the best use of time when they are open, and before that 10 p.m. cut-off.
It's all about diversifying, isn't it?
It is absolutely true.
I guess it is partly that, but I mean, I guess also the reality is now going to be, you know, coming back to this viable jobs term. The reality for a lot of businesses is that, you know, they're not, or they're under furlough, they haven't been employing staff, you know, for one third of their normal working week. And therefore, you know, in kind of black and white terms, you know, that position effectively has become redundant. And kind of tough choices and tough decisions are going to have to be made, Alex.
Yeah, businesses will be facing some tough decisions. One point to note that we have seen, though, is that businesses that were looking at making some redundancies with a view to the job retention scheme ending at the end of October have possibly already sent out some notices or gone through a consultation with their staff, and the job support scheme may now in fact offer an alternative. It'd be interesting to see what can be done to possibly reverse measures that may have already been taken if they do believe that some jobs are viable. And another point that I tend to see as well is that businesses don't want to make their staff redundant. For a lot of SMEs, they have a team that they've worked hard to bring together over a number of years, and they feel, you know, we're all people, we're attached to those individuals, they're friends as well as colleagues and employees at times, and so they don't want to make redundancies. And in those situations, they're actually seeing a trade-off between, you know, the calculations of what are the finances saying, do I need to make people redundant, and actually, can I bear the cost to keep this team together, and hopefully through into next year when things will improve.
Actually, it would be worse for me to make those positions redundant, to then have to recruit and ramp my business up again, than it would be to bear the short-term cost of continuing to pay those salaries, I guess. So
And that just adds another frame to it, really, alongside the job support scheme, and working out what the viability is of a role, or three roles, combining them into one.
Yeah, well, just to sort of add another element into the mix, Alex, before I let you go. So as well as kind of grappling with, you know, with really getting to grips with the numbers in their business owners are now also being asked to think about Brexit at the end of the year. We're counting down the clock now, aren't we? We've got 3 months until the end of the transition period when we are going to exit the EU proper. What is your advice currently to businesses out there who, you know, need to have one eye on Brexit as well?
So before the pandemic, Brexit was a key part of conversations with clients. We were urging those businesses that do trade with the EU, or individuals based in the EU, or they are supplied by businesses in the EU, to start having a look at Brexit and planning as best they could as to how they feel they may be affected. Of course, the issue we've got at the moment is that we're not sure still whether we're going to have a trade deal or not at the end of it. So that's still an unanswered question. But there are other areas that are more certain now. So businesses should have been looking at their customer and supplier base and working out what may be happening in terms of their VAT returns and potentially duties. But again, we're looking at the trade deal issue there. And any businesses, of course, locally that do employ staff that are coming from the EU or they're sending staff to the EU and understanding terms such as settled status and helping staff through that will also have been a key part for businesses. So it has been obviously around for a while.
Yes.
We were advising clients to, and still are advising clients to have a look at it.
Yeah.
And businesses that I've spoken to have still been planning and actually managed to plan reasonably well before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And it's just revisiting those plans now and updating it as new information comes to light.
Yeah. Well, I am going to put you on the spot and I'm going to ask you, you know, the question. Do you think it would be more pragmatic for the government and the EU leaders to kind of get together around the table, and instead of having all this brinkmanship about, you know, trade deals, Good Friday Agreement, or everything that's kind of being discussed at the moment, wouldn't it be just more pragmatic, do you think, to just say, look, let's put this on ice for another 12 months? You know, businesses throughout the world are dealing with the same problems. The administrative burden, the stress on business owners at the moment is unprecedented. Can we not just defer this another 12 months?
In my opinion, I think that would be sensible, but having seen other articles around recently, and even in today's press, it seems as though everybody is close to reaching an agreement on some kind of deal. Mm-hmm. It's just how quickly can that information then be made available to businesses so that they can finalise the plans and they know where they stand. That's the bigger question.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it all just depends. Again, the devil will be in the detail.
Everything at the moment.
Yeah, so, I mean, just to summarise, I guess, Alex, from your point of view, it's so important at the moment to have the conversation with your accountant, with your business advisors, you know, just to really understand your business line by line in terms of the financials.
Yeah, it's incredibly important, and as we've said already on the show, with technology now, you can meet for shorter periods and cover more ground in terms of producing forecasts and management accounts. There's software available there out on in the cloud that you can use that can get you financial information almost at a click of a button to help businesses make decisions. So I'd urge anybody to meet regularly with their advisors if they can.
Yeah.
But depending on the size of the business, you know, a monthly meeting may not be necessary, but certainly to have some information quarterly is key. And if they do find themselves in a situation where their business is affected by lockdown, then the meeting with their advisors and teams on a weekly basis can also help to plan cash flows and liquidity.
Brilliant. Well, on that basis, because we do need to bring the interview to a close, Alex, tell us how we can get in touch with you and Burgess Hodgson to have that conversation about our business.
So the easiest place to find me is on our website, burgesshodgson.co.uk. You can also follow us on various social media channels. So we're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And we're regularly updating those pages to keep everybody abreast of the latest guidance.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really, really tough times, not just for your clients, but obviously, you know, you're a business as well. So, you know, everything we're talking about affects you guys in exactly the same way. So we're all in it together, ultimately, I guess, aren't we?
Well, I was told it. We're all in our own boats, but in a similar storm.
I like that one. Thank you very much.
Yeah, fantastic to have you on, and hopefully we'll get you on again at some point in the near future. And we'll kind of get into a bit more detail as time progresses. So thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Speak to you soon.
Bye
bye.
Bye bye.
Wow, what a great show we've had this week, then, Martin. Lots of information.
I can't believe how much we're all being asked to kind of keep in our heads at the moment.
I know.
Keep on top of.
But there's lots of information out there on websites, and obviously it's the winter economy plan, although Martin has been going through that, the autumn statement.
It was called the autumn statement, and it's been published as the winter economy plan.
Oh dear, so even we're a bit confused, but hey, we are going to be back again on the 12th of October with two great guests, and we look forward to seeing you there. So it's goodbye from me
and goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Bye.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect. Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_biz.